So if you're really afraid of an emotion or dread having an emotion and then you have it, opening up to be mindful of it is the kind of the healing. So that, again, so that's really an important concept. All of this other kind of work you do in IFS is to help people, particularly in situations where their protectors have been polarized. It's very common that you have someone with a critic on one shoulder and a rebel on the other. And the more the critic shames them by saying you're so stupid or whatever it might be, the more then the shame there, the rebel then wants to kick in to take him away from the shame by doing something that then the critic finds very shameful, and then it keeps on berating them even more, and it's a vicious cycle. So it's a kind of a tenet of IFS that psychopathology, so every real psychiatric illness, is in some way the result of the polarizing of these protectors, where they increasingly hate each other and are at odds with each other, struggling.
Before we get started, if you enjoy these episodes, you might want to explore more at optimorc.com. Our website offers unique content, tools, and exercises to help you thrive at work and beyond. We have an in-depth masterclass which covers our entire theory of growth. We have daily recommendations for personalized advice, and we have a platform to help groups and organizations learn and practice optimal work together. You can get a free trial at optimorc.com. Now let's get started with today's episode. Hey, this is Sharif here with another episode of the Optimal Work Podcast, joined by Dr. Kevin Majors. Kevin, good to be back here with you again.
Hey, Sharif, it's great to be back.
Yeah, Kevin. Well, last week, I thought we had a great conversation about IFS, internal family systems, an approach to therapy, psychology. And we mentioned towards the end of that we would do a follow-up episode on just making it very practical for people. I thought, you know, let's cover that this time. Follow through on that promise. What do you think?
Sounds great.
Okay. Well, maybe it's helpful just for people who even did hear last week's episode to just start with a brief refresher on IFS and what it is. So I don't know if you can just give kind of an overview.
Yeah. So IFS is internal family systems, as you mentioned. So Dick Schwartz is the guy who originally wrote about it and was doing it with patients. And it's a way of viewing kind of like the parts that we have inside and how we work with them. Underneath everything is what he calls the true self, which is just the you that's conscious. It's it's you in the seat of consciousness. And then we have these parts that sometimes will take over the seat of consciousness, and that's called blending. And parts are either protectors or exiles. The centerpiece is that you have these emotions that you are unwilling to experience. The unwillingness to experience something exiles it. Once you've exiled it, then you need something to detect if it's going to be triggered so that it can prevent it from being triggered. And that's a proactive protector. It's also called a manager. And then you have another part that is a strategy for escaping this emotion if it does happen to get triggered. And they call that the firefighter. But I think of it more as an escape strategy. Because a firefighter might make you think that it's going up to the emotion and trying to put it out. But really, it's just trying to get away from it. So then you can, as you learn to work with these parts, you'll see that there is a certain consistency that we all have emotions that we don't enjoy having. It's just necessary. But the degree to which we're unwilling to feel something is how much then it generates this structure. So I like to call this the structure of unwillingness. It always has these three parts: something to prevent, the exile, or to escape the exile. So you have the preventer, the escaper, and the exile. So all of these are meant to be united in us as a kind of awareness. So the natural kind of role for a preventer or a manager to have is just to see challenges coming. The natural role for the exile, the emotion to have, is simply to let us know something has been detected. it's just a messenger. It's just telling us some information. Yeah, and so it's not bad in itself. Like if it's anxiety, it's telling us that we've detected a threat, and that's all it means. And then the urge to escape, that actually is one way of handling an emotion, but the better way is simply tuning into the emotion so that it knows that we got the message. So if we're willing to experience these things, in fact, they all de-escalate, and we more and more find ourselves in true self, which is when we're happy and curious and able to connect with others. That's the general overview. So IFS is just a way of getting people to stay in true self and to then heal each of these parts that previously they were unwilling to be with.
Before we continue, a brief message. If you're benefiting from these discussions, please hit like and subscribe to our channel. Doing so helps us reach more people. So you're not just learning yourself, you're helping others discover a path to growth and flourishing too. Thanks so much for your support. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Yeah. So, okay. That's a great overview of, I guess, the theory behind it and the theory of mind that's kind of underlying it, what our mind is doing. And then one of the things that appeals to me about it is that it's, I suppose there are many therapists who do specialize in IFS and take patients and so forth and do it in a clinical setting. But it's also meant to be a way of empowering people to, you know, work with their own emotions and responses. So it can be like a, would you call it self-therapy technique?
I would.
Okay.
Yeah. To quote the book by Jay Early, so which is my favorite book on IFS. So I actually prefer Jay Early's writings. So he has, I think self-therapy has now 3 volumes. And they're great. So it is a way then of exercising what sometimes they call self-leadership. But we have to show up for these parts of us that we're like unwilling to. You can't just give in to them or give in to exiling them. We have to be there for them. So really, in a way, what first got me interested in IFS was seeing it as an extension of what you and I had once talked about as the inward living of ideals. How do you live compassion on the inside? How do you become understanding and patient on the inside? And you can see that there is a kind of analog that who would you trust to be more patient? Someone who can clamp down on their external showing of emotion? Or someone who truly inside is patient with whatever things show up? Really the second one, right? Like we know that we can all put on an outer show of some of these ideals, but that if we're going to be really tested, the inner happening is actually so important to determining everything in terms of how we are able to still connect with others. So if we can't connect with these parts of ourselves and kind of understand them and be appreciative in a sense of the contribution that these strategies are trying to make, it's really hard for us to then live those things on the outside. So first we live understanding on the inside and then on the outside. First there's an inner connectedness and then there can be an outer connectedness. And we also had done an episode on the inner critic, which is probably the most easy part for most people to hear. Not everyone has an inner critic. Maybe I saw an estimation that was something like 70% of people report an inner critic. I'm not sure, but it's not 100%.
It astonished me. I remember we were with a group of people and you asked people who has an inner critic, and it just astonished me that some people didn't. I mean, it was baffling to me, but.
Yeah. So people are very different. It can be on the other side baffling. People would be like, well, why would you do that to yourself? Like to some people it never occurred for them to have an inner critic. So that doesn't mean that they don't have other internal managers, so that are equally sometimes difficult to work with. So there's nothing to, so it's not like it's bad that people have an inner critic. Now sometimes though, the critic will say very harsh things. And even that you can start, so what IFS does, which I love, is this one question you can always ask yourself, which is, how do I feel towards what's showing up inside? So let's say you have the critic and you hear the voice of the critic And maybe it's saying something like, oh, you're such a loser, you're such a fool, you know, and saying all these things. Well, as you're thinking of the critic saying those things, you can ask yourself, like, right now, how do I feel towards it? What we want to do is help people to get to a point where they can actually feel compassion for it. One way to get to compassion is you ask the question, how burdened does the critic feel right now? And it's an interesting thing about parts. They will, as a rule, they will show you their burden, which is the degree to which they feel that they're doing heavy work. And just that question is enough when I'm working with people to get them on board with the whole kind of thought experience that they're having. Because it can be kind of weird at first. And so you have to be very careful, like, okay, now this will sound weird, but you know, I want you to like remember the voice of the critic. How do you feel towards it right now? And then they'll feel afraid of it or angry at it or wanting to somehow fight and argue back. All of that you have to ask all those reactions to step aside. You're trying to get to a point where they can just feel a sense of curiosity and incipient connection and compassion. And then, but you can ask them, how burdened does the critic feel? And then now most people can then feel much more compassion for it. And you do these imaginal maneuvers, which is you imagine that what would it be like if you just were overflowing with compassion for it? And that overflow is like a light coming out of you or like a fire coming out. And imagine now that your hand is shining with that and you can just touch the burden and see the burden transform into something playful and weightless. Imagine it can just kind of go off. I've never had someone not be able to experience the boulder or there's usually some kind of very heavy object that is on top of the person transform into something. Sometimes it's into like birds or into bubbles or like there's always something light and playful that kind of it transforms into. And interestingly, their image of the critic that they have in their mind always responds gratefully to that. It's interesting, right? That you get such a consistent reaction. I've done this with many, many people. And they all have, the critic is appreciative of it. You know, and then you use that to build a bond, to just try to be telling the critic that, you know, you understand how hard it's been working. And you appreciate it's trying to protect you from something. And then you can ask it, what is it afraid of? So it's going to be many things, yeah.
That's I think one of the really interesting parts is that you can talk, or one of the really interesting aspects of IFS is that you can start to talk with the parts and then, I mean, they can provide information that you might not have even consciously known, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The fascinating thing is that really what we're doing here is, this is like left brain, right brain therapy. Parts are all left-brained. So they're basically, if they're protectors, they are strategies for managing emotions. But it's all left-brained. So they can do nothing that the right brain can do. So the true self, with the seat of consciousness, is really the right brain. But that means that because the parts are left-brained, they can talk. And that's the talking we hear in our head when we're going about our day. In IFS, is always seen as parts talking. So the thoughts that we have in our head, IFS says, is thoughts or parts talking to each other. So you have a dilemma. It's like two parts talking to each other. And whenever you have a dilemma, it's very interesting to try listening to the interlocutors. Who's having this conversation? One, there's like two points of view. Now, these points of view, you'll find out, they probably have an agenda. A left-brained, get-it-done agenda, which is to somehow lessen some or prevent some feeling. So it's a funny thing that there are always these strategies that are in. So parts are really implicit strategies to handle negative emotions. So that have been overlearned. So they tend to be things that we learned a long time ago. You can ask parts what their first memory was, and they actually will have memories. And they will be like, this time when you were in first grade and this thing happened. You know, and you can go back to that's when they first learned that this emotion is painful And I have to do everything I can to make sure to prevent it. It's also why shame is such a primordial, it's like probably the deepest kind of emotion that we're unwilling to have, because that goes back to when we're very, very young, totally dependent on the approval of our parents. So that experience of total dependence is that, yeah, we have to be careful to win approval and to maintain the approval of others. So it's like, it's just built into us inherently that that is going to be a deep fear that somehow we're going to be disapproved of.
Mm-hmm. So, Kevin, I guess one kind of question in terms of applying this in their lives, like mm-hmm. the way you're describing it is it's all very interior, you know, internal. Mm-hmm. It's all kind of happening within the person's mind. So I guess you would call it cognitive. So, you know, we're, mm-hmm. I think OptumWork is very much in the tradition of CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy. So what is the behavioral, is there a behavioral dimension of this? Like, okay, you work to integrate the parts and then now you actually have to like leave your chair and go do something, or is it all just mm-hmm. a purely cognitive process?
Yeah, I think that the behavior is going to come in your willingness to enter situations that could trigger a negative emotion. Okay, so that is going to get your managers concerned, because they're going to be trying to then think of ways of preventing this emotion from getting triggered. And the obvious thing is just don't go in the situation. So in a way, managers are dominated by negative predictions of situations like that. Those negative predictions can be altered by reframing to deliberately set a new kind of prediction that, you know what, this situation will involve feeling some anxiety, but that, let's say anxiety is the feared emotion, but that actually is going to give us all of the adrenaline we need to perform even better in that situation. So therefore, we need to go into the situation and with a sense of being eager to utilize this to actually grow. So when we're really leaning into challenges, what that really means is that we're leaning into these negative emotions, despite the negative predictions, which we have reframed, and despite urges to then escape or to somehow escape the whole thing. So what I see is like the biggest trouble comes usually from people's negative trances. A negative trance is a sign that a person's protector, their escape artist, their inner, it could be a rebel, it could be a relaxer, an escaper, it could be an angry part. Whenever these kinds of protectors kick in, they're experienced as such a powerful impulse that people get tunnel vision. And the tunnel is there as long as they're blended with that part. So the opposite of that is in the moment to actually practice mindfulness. And that's how you undo the tunnel vision. So I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, there's some preparatory work you could do of like trying to reframe in advance the situation that will trigger the emotion. There's the way you're going to be more mindful in the situation. So it's to counteract the urge to flee. But then there's also, you have to have some positive sense of what you want engaging this challenging situation to look like. IFS is very internal, but it can be compatible with good behavioral work.
Okay, so Kevin, so it's great to see the kind of integration or the relationship between OptumWork and reframing mindfulness challenge, the behavioral dimension, and how that complements the IFS kind of understanding of the way the mind is working in these different parts of us. So I'd like to try to fit in a third piece here, which is actually how do we do the IFS work? How do you recommend that people do it, if you do recommend it? So would you say like, okay, you know, maybe people do, one thing we recommend is that people do some mindfulness or meditation practice in the day. Mm-hmm. Maybe they do 15 minutes, or is that kind of enough? Would you recommend people do some IFS, some parts work during that time of meditation mm-hmm. or reflection? Is that enough time to do it? Like, how much time do people typically need? Or what's the right situation for them to be actually engaging it as just a starting point here?
In my experience, people can get a lot out of, there are like IFS meditations that you can find. They're on YouTube. Jay Early used to have a site, but unfortunately he took it down. I'm not sure why, where he had a number of exercises available. So, but you can find like IFS type meditations to be like, so there are different ways of doing it. What I would tell people to do is you can just try to practice a few of these inward ideals and see what shows up. So I don't think you have to necessarily like try mapping out all your parts. Maybe the idea is the first thing to practice is curiosity. The second is compassion. And the third is connection. And just to think of working with whatever shows up, to have no agenda, to have no plans or anything. And the way you first practice curiosity then is just ask yourself, what particularly strong sensation do I have right now in my body? Are there any areas right now of tension? So people can chronically carry tension in certain places that over time they actually learn to associate with parts. That if they have a part of themselves, that like the an inner warrior, or people can have a scrupulous part, that when those things are more on guard, then they notice that there's a tension maybe right in the, you know, between their shoulder blades or in the base of their neck or something. So one thing is just finding where is the tension in the body or any particularly notable sensation. IFS calls this a trailhead, meaning that there's some interesting work that can be done by following this, like a path you discover in the woods. So that's what you're looking for. Are there any trailheads right now?
Does it have to be a sensation, or could also just be some kind of friction in your life that maybe just occurs? Maybe I, you know, gave into distractions a lot in work, or I had a kind of negative thoughts about someone, you know, that are a little too critical, and then I say, okay, I'll reflect on that in my next time of self-therapy with IFS. So tomorrow morning, I'll kind of ponder, like, I'll treat that as my trailhead and try to dive a little bit more into what was happening there.
I think that in IFS, technically, the trailhead is a sensation. So you're finding something in the body. But then what comes out of that may be completely imaginative. And in my experience, IFS tends to work in parallel processes. On the one hand, you can attend just to the feelings, or you can attend to the imaginary processes that accompany it. So proactive protectors tend to be talkative. Reactive protectors, the firefighters or escape ones, they tend to be less talkative, more impulsive. So if you're hearing a voice in your head, like, not, I'm not talking here about schizophrenia, but I'm talking here like just the conversation in the head where people are berating themselves, let's say. Well, then that it would be, you could learn to bring curiosity to noticing it. And those very words would be like a quasi trailhead. Well, it gives you some in just to be curious and to be paying attention. So once you've detected something going on inside, one of these internalized reactions, you know, these parts, just try to understand then, what is it saying right now? You can be curious about what it's hoping you will do. And that actually will tell you something about what is it fearing will happen to you, or what is it fearing you will do? What's it afraid of? You can apply that curiosity to how burdened does it feel right now? There are other interesting questions you can ask if you're able to see it. You can see how far away is this part from me right now when I imagine them as an image in my mind? And are they looking at me or away from me? Are they willing to make eye contact? How do they react if you get closer? There's all these things where when you're working with people, these are called process images in hypnosis talk. So because it's an image that has a little bit of a life of its own, and the more questions you ask of it, the richer that life gets and becomes more engrossing. So doing IFS is, to me, feels identical to doing hypnosis. And the experience people have is they kind of lose track of time. They're there. They're like, you're working with parts. It's not like having a dream-like experience, but it can be pretty vivid. And at one level, there's this imaginal thing going on, but there's also this emotional feeling happening at the same time. So that's curiosity.
So yeah, my sense is maybe for someone listening to this, they're thinking, okay, how does IFS kind of resolve? Like, where do I go with this? That, okay, I have these parts and I start to be curious and I'm asking them questions and I'm learning more about them. My sense is that if you just did that, that would be, in a sense, helpful. But also, is there some sense that, like, hey, we're going in a direction here. We're trying to bring these parts into harmony with the true self or with each other. I'm trying to get them to disappear. Or like,
all these parts are created by a person's unwillingness to experience an emotion. The final thing always needs to be the willingness to experience that emotion. So if you can help people get directly to the emotion, then you can just, any mindfulness of emotion is doing the hardest part of IFS, even if it doesn't think of it in terms of IFS. So if you're really afraid of an emotion or dread having an emotion and then you have it, opening up to be mindful of it is the kind of the healing. So that's really an important concept. All of this other kind of work you do in IFS is to help people, particularly in situations where their protectors have been polarized. It's very common that you have someone with a critic on one shoulder and a rebel on the other. And the more the critic shames them by saying you're so stupid or whatever it might be, the more the rebel then wants to kick in to take him away from the shame by doing something that then the critic finds very shameful, and then it keeps on berating them even more, and it's a vicious cycle. So it's a kind of a tenet of IFS that psychopathology, so every real psychiatric illness, is in some way the result of the polarizing of these protectors, where they increasingly hate each other and are at odds with each other, struggling. And then people at one point are blended with the critic, at one point they're blended with the rebel, and that's a very unstable kind of dynamism to have inside of you. So IFS is just a way of, you can actually help. For instance, IFS would say you can help addictive urges, which are rebels, just by addressing the inner critic and getting it to de-escalate. And by doing that, it's easier and easier then for the rebel to de-escalate. And then more and more you can work at becoming willing to feel the emotion that was kind of driving it all, and typically shame. So the idea is that if your person is living well and their emotions are balanced and they don't have these powerful negative trances or voices of negativity in their head, then there's not much for them to work on with IFS. But if you do have powerful negative trances, that's a reactive protector you can learn to de-escalate. Or if you have very powerful negativity in your inner speaking to yourself, then that too can be addressed. And IFS just gives you a compassionate way of doing that. That always is where you, so I, like, the first thing is curiosity. The second, though, compassion is such a core of the work, because that's what allows you then to connect. And it's just to ask yourself, how do I feel towards this right now? You know, and so even like, say, people have panic attacks, you can ask yourself, how do I feel towards these attacks when they occur? Could you bring more compassion into it? Just doing that kind of work, even if you didn't really think of it as a part, it's still kind of the inward living of an ideal. And that's the spirit of IFS. You're living this kind of compassion on the inside, curiosity, connectedness to what you're feeling. So I think it ends up, when you do IFS with people, it feels very gentle and yet powerful at shifting people, but without any kind of sense of arm twisting or blaming or rigid goal setting. I know there's a lot of things that could be pitfalls of doing really good work with people. And IFS, I've just found to be a very gentle way of helping to get inside the dynamic and start to undo it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's such a powerful approach that when you think of, or when one thinks of, building better habits or changing one's life or, setting higher goals, that there's a tendency, I think, at least in me, to just be tough on myself and, rigid in these ways, setting rules for myself. And so I like this approach of, okay, if you encounter friction, it's not that you, curiosity, compassion, connection with these parts of you that are causing friction. And I think even that just helps.
The real fortitude is the willingness to feel the negative emotion. It takes a kind of bravery to do that. But as you do it, when you actually learn to embrace the emotion, it starts to feel more and more like a child. And you learn that there is this kind of sensitive part that needs loving attention. And one of the ways that people, when they've connected with that sense, you know, and it could be like the child could be an anxious child that's small, or it could be a sad, or it could be the feeling of shame, you know, that one of the most powerful IFS interventions is then to try to like deal compassionately with that, with the emotion as a child, and then pass on to images of the most loving people you can imagine. And this is where a lot of people, where their faith comes into it, they imagine like spiritual images. But whatever it is, imagine the most loving people in your life. Imagine the most encouraging people you've ever known. Have them come into the image to also kind of handle and pay attention to the child, and pass from one to the other. It's very powerful, actually, that you can heal people on the inside and even connect them in a deeper way, you know, in an imaginal way, maybe deeper, to even their faith.
Yeah,
so it can be, it's open to anything.
Yeah, that's really cool. Great. Well, Kevin, I think that's a great note for us to end on here today. We're basically out of time. So,
all right, Sharif.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Kevin. All right, we'll be back next week.
Thanks for tuning in to today's episode. If you enjoyed our conversation and you're looking for more in-depth guidance, check out optimalwork.com, our platform of content, tools, and exercises that will help you thrive at work and beyond. See you next week.